Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
And welcome to the birthday edition of the Billboard Chart Beat Podcast, because we're taping this on Tuesday, October 2nd, which is my birthday.
I was going to say happy birthday, but now that you just came out and said it first, it's not quite as humble.
You know, I've given up humility for 27, Gary. Oh wow, I just told on myself.
Getting up there.
I know. So welcome everybody to the Billboard Chart Beat Podcast. My name is Trevor Anderson. I'm a chart manager here at Billboard. I'm joined by my esteemed, veteran, distinguished co-host.
Gary Trust, Billboard Senior Director of Charts. So October 2nd is your birthday. It's also Sting's birthday and Tiffany's birthday.
And Gandhi's birthday, too. So there's a nice little, you know.
I just knew Sting and Tiffany.
Maybe does that say a lot about you, Gary, where you focus your energy in the world?
No, it's one of my favorite chart stats that they were both born October 2nd. And they both have top 10 hits called All This Time. So you just need a top 10 hit called All This Time if you're going to be in the October 2nd.
I guess it's the club. The club to be in, yeah.
You and Gandhi.
Yeah, yeah. You didn't realize you were sitting next to somebody who shared the birthday, the wisdom, the astrological balance.
At least one thing in common. All right, we're continuing our ongoing series of chats on the podcast this week with country stars and label executives. We've had some really great names, all thanks to Jim Asker, who's set these up, our Billboard Nashville-based senior chart manager. We've had Florida Georgia Line on before, Maren Morris, Luke Bryan, Keith Urban. This week is our special guest, superstar, hitmaker for about 2 decades now, along with also special guest Cindy Mabe, president of Universal Music Group Nashville. Jim's going to interview both of them. Same kind of thing we've been doing, where we get into these chats about how an artist and a label work together. So great to interview an artist, but when you get the label executive as well, it just gives a whole different dynamic. So happy to have both Keith and Cindy on. Lots of topics coming up. How does Keith know when an album he's working on is finished? Who picks singles from his albums? How does that process work? Recently worked with Julia Michaels on his country airplay chart top 10, Coming Home. They're going to talk about that. Collaborating with other female artists, Carrie Underwood, especially at a time when country artists are pretty few and far between for female artists on country radio these days. So that's coming up. Keith also gets into, does he ever get any downtime with his wife, who just happens to be Nicole Kidman.
Who just happens to be.
Jim said, too, that Keith is really one of the nicest people he's ever interviewed. And our intern, Nicole, is from Nashville.
Not Nicole Kidman.
Nicole, what's your Keith Urban story?
This summer, my boyfriend was helping clean pools in Nashville, and he got to clean Keith Urban's house, and he's actually from New Zealand. So I was like, oh my gosh, you guys have it in common. Like, be best friends, please. Like, but Keith's really nice. He's very friendly, and I go to Belmont, so he came last year and did a talk with Julia Michaels and shared about how they write music together, and he's just a really laid-back guy. He's good to see around town.
He's good to see around town. I actually saw Nicole and Keith in Nashville once about 5 years ago. We were Green Hills, the movie theater Green Hills, for the Nashvillians in the know. I think it was the third Batman film, and we were there like over the summer, and they just happened to like just a Saturday night, just be at the movies. They were actually in the theater next to us, so missed out by that much. But at one point, you know, kind of like the pseudo stalkers we all were back in college, we like kind of hung around like by the lobby. And at one point, Nicole had to go to the bathroom, of course, I guess. And Nicole's like walking by, and you know, it's like you're trying to look at her, but like make it that like you're not looking at her. But she obviously at this point in her career would know that you are looking at her, even if you're not looking at her. So she kind of turned to me and she said, hi. And then I was just like, ah, like an Oscar winner just told me hi. It was cool.
Yeah.
So, I co-signed the fact that, yeah, Keith and Nicole, a lot of people, yeah, they see him at church, at Starbucks, like just like with most Nashville celebrities, you know, there's kind of a different world versus New York where it feels like everybody's kind of hiding on purpose.
I'm nowhere near as cool as you guys. This podcast is my Keith Urban story. It's as close as I'm getting.
We know.
Keith Urban, Cindy Maeve, and Jim Asker coming up on the Billboard Chartbeat Podcast.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more, with Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to Quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.
There's a place that I know where they all know me. I gotta get back now to the ones who love me. Wrap myself around you, never let you go. There's nothing in the world that feels like the place that I know where they all know me. I gotta get back now to the ones who love me. Wrap myself around you, never let you go. There's nothing in the world that feels like coming home.
Hey everybody, this is Jim Asker on the Billboard Chartbeat Podcast, and my guest today, Cindy Maeve, president of Universal Music Group. Welcome, Cindy.
Thanks, glad to be here.
And Capitol Records recording artist, country music icon, Keith Urban. I'm so thankful that both of you took the time to do this.
Yeah, thank you for asking.
Yeah.
I interviewed you once before. It was on the phone, and it was a long, long time ago when
Indeed
I was in radio.
It was.
So, you know, and I remember seeing you, if I could just connect the dots from where I started with my relationship with your music is a long time. So I saw The Ranch at Westbury Music Fair.
Oh, you're
Island.
The one. I'm looking for you everywhere.
I always thought it was like a country version of a power trio, like Cream or, you know, one of those acts, but a great act. I didn't meet you that night, but I did meet you the weekend. Capitol Records did a showcase when they signed you in New York. I was sitting right in back of you during Phantom of the Opera. And I'm sure you don't remember, but do you remember the showcase at all in New York City?
I remember doing one upstairs somewhere, or I feel like we did a couple there. There was one in a club.
You did a couple because they used to really do a lot of showcases for radio back then.
And I feel like it was a club that had like umpteen bands on, and we had this tiny little time frame to get up there, play, and get off because the next band was coming up and all of
really?
That.
Really?
Yeah, that's one of my recollections.
Huh.
That could have been a gig though. It's all a blur, Jim.
Cindy, when did you start at UMG? 2007?
2007, yes.
So your relationship with Keith is a long time now.
Yeah.
11 years. I just want to give some fun chart facts before we start, because that's my job. I'm the chart manager for country. So I know well because I see it all the time. You know, starting in 2012, the Hot Country Songs chart became a hybrid, which mixes streaming, airplay, and sales. Keith has had 16 number ones, 38 straight top tens in a row, which is unbelievable. 21 number ones on Billboard's Country Airplay chart, which ranks you sixth among all artists in the history of the chart. And that's among all artists. And 6 number ones on top country albums, 2 number ones on the Billboard 200, and Graffiti U was a number one. And I just want to congratulate you on that success from so long ago to now. It just seems to me like you're at the peak of your career.
Well, hopefully not the peak. But I love that I still get to do what I love to do. And that I have, I mean, Capital and I have been together a long, long time. I signed over there in 1997. So to still be there 21 years later is extraordinary. But it's testament to how supportive the label's been of me and my music and where I'm sort of interested in going with it.
Is it still exciting for both of you, really, for when an album debuts at number one? Is it still... Do the charts even matter to you anymore, or do you still...
They only matter if you're number one, otherwise they don't mean a thing, right?
Exactly.
No, it's an amazing feeling. Absolutely. Okay. It's like hearing I Love You.
So you don't get used to
it? You never get sick of it. It's beautiful. No.
That's
an incredible feeling.
And that you do so well at radio, and you still have... you guys have managed a great relationship that you still have at radio. Which I think is just so admirable that, you know, back when I was introduced to your music, you just seemed so accessible to programmers and the staff, and that you embrace them. And that's not an easy thing. So, you know, it just comes from, it just seems like you're really giving about everything.
Well, I always think, first of all, we all love music. So first of all, we've got way more in common than anything else. We love music. We've got audiences. And we want to find ways to connect with our audience. So we got so much more in common.
Can you tell me, for fans that are listening, who don't know, what is the relationship between a star artist like Keith and with the record label, Cindy? What's a snapshot of that you could explain for everybody?
Well, I should start with, there is no one else like Keith. So, I mean, every relationship is different, just like in life. But for us, we have a really strong relationship. I feel like we're a team, and I feel like we go into strategy meetings together. What is the next 5 years? What are the next 3 months, for that matter? I mean,
you go that far, 5 years?
Yeah, I think that we're looking down the road so that we stay very on top of, I mean, this business, this world is changing so quickly. How people consume, how do you connect with other people? It changes so rapidly, and even the partners and players of how do you expose your music change that quickly, that we have to kind of stay in the trenches together. So for us, it's I think we have a really great relationship that we bounce ideas and thoughts, and you know, I design all his album covers and packages as well. So.
Wow. That's
I'm
that's
just kidding.
Awesome.
That is not true. So, but we share a lot of
Cindy,
thoughts
and
decisions.
I am very gullible, so you can tell me. You can tell me you played saxophone on the track, and
oh, well,
you would prefer that not to happen. So,
when was the first time you heard Graffiti U?
He actually had me over to his studio house, and he played me different parts of it. And then at one point, when he was finished with the record, he played it for me, and I was pretty blown away.
And the new single's already in the top 40, by the way.
It's incredible.
Congratulations on it. It's a great single.
Thank you.
How do you know when an album like that album seems so complex to me. It's just like all these producers, all these writers, all these guest artists. How long did that take to make that record?
On average, they take maybe about a year, I think, of writing and recording and trying different things, trying different collaborations. Not everything you hear. Well, there's a lot of things. Everything you don't hear was what didn't work. Well, you know, so
how do you know when it's finished?
It's a great question. I think when I feel like it's saying, when it makes me feel a certain way, really, really from top to bottom, when it makes me feel a certain way. Because for me, it's very much like putting a set list together for a show. I know how I want to begin. I know how I want to end. I know what I want to, the journey I want everyone to go on with me, the things I want to say, the things I hope people feel. And the songs, and I need certain songs to be able to achieve that. So those are the ones that end up making the record.
How many songs did you do for the record that,
probably about 25 all up and whittled it down.
Will those come out at some time?
Maybe. Mm-hmm. Yeah, maybe. Some songs, they're just not right for that particular cluster. Again, like a set list, it's like the songs that get left out of the set list on Sunday night got left out because it was a Sunday night, but they're back in on Friday night because that's a different crowd. So it's just finding the right songs for the objective.
Do you like your team to disagree with you? Like, Cindy, do you ever?
I like them to be honest.
Mm-hmm. So whatever, if they have an honest disagreement, that's cool.
Yeah. Oh, gosh, yeah. It's crucial, actually. Sycophants is the death.
That's just telling you, you know.
It's the worst.
I like people around me that just tell me how great I am all the time.
Yeah, but that's it. Not everybody can hear that. I mean, just to go back to, you know, for Keith to turn in a record, you pry it out of his hands. That's when it's done in a lot of ways. And I think that that is because great artists see it that way. That there's always something that can change. There's always something, what is the crowd? What is the, maybe the decision changes. I mean, we had an instance on the last record where he turned in the record and then turned in another song the next day that was supposed to be on the record. Like, it is.
It's never over then.
The beauty of that, because he's great. I mean, that's what great artists do. They push for maybe it's not ever completely done. Maybe it could have been better. Maybe, and then so there has to be that line of, oh, today we're prying it out of your hands. We're going today. And that is...
And you have a different set of ears than Keith has, a musician,
absolutely.
Label person,
yeah.
A record person, a song person, right?
Yeah.
Somebody asked me once when I was a radio programmer, they said, are you a song guy or a record guy? I said, I think I'm a record guy.
I would tell you that I'm a song person, but it's because I'm not working frontline at radio that I'm not. So I actually am a song person. I am looking for what's going to make a difference from a commercial statement, but I'm also looking for what just moves me. So whether or not that fits the format of does it belong on the radio or not is a different question for me, and I don't hear music that way. You get, depending on what your job function is, you absolutely hear it a different way.
Who picks the singles, Keith?
It's usually collective.
It is?
Yeah, pretty much across the board. I've had songs that I thought would be right, and then the team has sort of said collectively, well, we think maybe this one, and here's all the reasons why. And whenever that's happened, I always take that into consideration, but at some point I have to just make a decision, yay or nay. And my team has always supported my final decision, mm-hmm. But I trust them a lot.
For the last piece that I wrote for Billboard, we did an average of the last 3 years, how long songs take to get to number one. And the average is 27 weeks. Mm. So that doesn't really, for artists like you, Keith and Carrie, they could go up and down the charts in 13 weeks, almost too fast.
Yes.
Where other artists, newer artists, they can only get one, maybe two singles off a record, right?
Correct.
It just seems like such a, you know, you're always changing things around and have to strategize. How do you know when I don't want to release any more singles off this record? I want to move on.
I think when everybody starts to feel that... maybe there's two parts to the answer, to answer that. On one hand, if I've started writing new material and what we've got feels like it makes way more sense right now than the sixth single we're about to come with. I mean, at the end of the day, what I've found looking back at all my albums is, I'll give you an example. You Look Good in My Shirt. That mm-hmm. was going to be the fifth single off of Golden Road. And we were about to come with that song. Everybody loved it. Everyone felt really good about it. I was already in the studio making the next album, which was called Be Here. And we'd written a song called Days Go By. And
great song.
We'd recorded that. And when everybody heard it, they all listened to You Look At My Shirt and Days Go By. And I said, well, these are both singles, but if we're ready to go with new music, maybe let's go with new music. So we went with the first single of the next album. Shirt just drifted away. Fast forward 7 years... when I was in between albums and somebody said, you should re-record You Look At My Shirt. And we went and re-recorded it, released it, and went to number one. This is crazy.
Amazing.
7 years later.
Well, I think you should re-release Female at one point.
Thank you.
I have to say I'm a fan.
Thank you,
I love
Jim.
That record.
Thank you.
And if I was a programmer, I would have played the hell out of it.
And I
feel like it should have been a number one record. It got mixed up in a lot of politics, it seemed.
And
I just love the, even taking out the words, I just love the way you phrase that record, the way you sing it.
I love that song.
It's just great.
Thank you.
And I love Drop Top. So
thank you.
Donna Jean, one of your managers, told me that, millennials like that. So I'm glad that I still think like a millennial. So So I would love for that to be a single. You know, the current single is great, but I don't know. You know, with so many great songs, I don't know how you pick them. And I want to ask about the collaborations, because Cassie Ashton is on that song. She's tremendous.
Cheers.
I'm a big Lindsay L fan. Yeah. I have her on the record. Thank Julia you. Michaels. How do you guys decide on collaborations, or is it all Keith, your taste? And
it's all Keith.
Mm-hmm. To a large degree, except in the case of Drop Top, we'd written the song and needed a girl for the chorus. And I had a few people in mind, but I wanted a particular kind of, not just a particular voice, but a particular kind of girl who had a certain way of being that wasn't an act. She needed just swagger and attitude.
Well, she's got that. Huh?
But it needs to be legit. And there's a lot of people that have it, but it's a bit of an act. Mm-hmm. You know, they don't live it.
Right.
And I said to Cindy, I said, do you have anybody in mind? She goes, I do. Absolutely. Hands down, Cassie Ashton. And I'd never heard of Cassie.
And she's on one of the labels, Cindy, right?
Yes.
You guys signed her?
Yeah.
What imprint is she on? Is she on MCA?
She's on MCA.
Wow, great.
Yeah.
I think that's so awesome that you embrace. I looked at the chart this morning. There's 6 women in the top 40. That includes collaborations like Mindy Smith and Miranda, featured artists. 6 in the top 30, which is a shame. Mm. And I just think it's so kudos to you for, you know, helping these. They're great artists, so they just need...
That's right.
Maybe a little hand or something. They don't need a hand, but you know what I mean.
Mm-hmm.
Well, they need a platform is what they need.
Yeah.
I mean, really, there aren't females on the radio for whatever the reason is at the moment. And they're still making great music. They're mm-hmm. still available out there. They need platforms. And this is where, I mean, again, just to brag on Keith, I do feel like he feels some... one, that they brought something to the table for him, but he's also always been one to share a spotlight, to give someone else a chance that to expose their music in different ways. And you could see that with the Julia Michaels video that went, I mean, when we launched at Street Week when she wasn't with us, I mean, she was with us because we had videos that were built with us all this time. Carrie Underwood, you're taking Cassie Ashton into venues that have never heard of Cassie Ashton, and you're breaking audiences and to say that is not a massive platform would be a complete understatement. So,
would you produce one of these artists? You seem to be a wizard in the studio to me.
I love being in the studio, and I would love to do some of that at some point. Yeah.
Well, there you go, Cindy. I just helped you out.
Thank you.
Cassie Ashton's first album, produced by Keith Urban, everyone. Talking about the show, Bridgestone Arena, I got to see that. And I was just, you know, I was telling you guys when we were all on the phone talking about this, I grew up a big Springsteen fan. I've seen him over 100 times, well over 100 times. And the pacing, the energy of the show, the community that you bring to the audience, I could only compare it to that, really. If you compared it, you don't want to compare. But I was just amazed how you bring the big crowd like that into it. One almost. And how do you do it?
Caring. And I think, and also coming from playing the clubs where, you know, those 12 people were easy to make feel like one. No, it's true. It's so true. It's literally that. It's coming from places
and
that
caring
are,
as much if you're playing for 12 or if you're playing for 12,000 or 100,000.
I was playing to 12,000 when there was 12 in the room. Mm-hmm. In my head, I was already playing to that many people. That's where I was headed. I wanted to get to that place. But then when I got to that place, it happened so incrementally that I never changed the way I performed from being in the little clubs, except maybe bigger hand gestures.
You know, I must say that when an artist brings someone on stage, like you brought Nicole and Reese on stage, which was awesome. And it was specifically Nashville, too. That show was specifically Nashville. Mm. And that's another thing that I always got from Bruce, that each show is its own specific event. And I bet you do that in every city then. You gauge it for that where you're playing, that it's for this particular market. And that show is specifically Nashville. Mm-hmm. And it was just great from wire to wire. And are you calling Audible? How does it, it's happening so fast. How do you keep, like, I'm going to do this now, or I'm going to do that now.
Yeah.
I'm going to bring Carrie on now.
Right.
Is that all planned out ahead of time, or are you doing audibles up there too?
All the above. Mm-hmm. All the above. There's a lot of things spontaneous.
Your band has to be on their toes then.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, yeah, yeah. We also, technology is such where even all the locked-in video and locked-in lighting cues are set up in such a way that I can extend certain parts of songs and it doesn't throw anything off. It's complicated, but...
So each song takes on its own life that night.
Yes, exactly. Correct. We can shorten it or lengthen it or scrap it or do whatever, and everything will still work for us, even video, which is crazy. If I want to repeat choruses and so forth, and we've got some content behind us, it will. There's ways for us to copy paste in real time and edit in real time.
Wow,
which is insane. I mean, like when you're taking out a show like that to those massive audiences for every night to feel like I will never see that night again, you really aren't, because every one of those shows is so different. And again, this is to me his magic above all else that he does. His performance of being so in the moment. I mean, I have had so many people come up to me and say, oh my God, like, this is one that happened to a guy that was in this building. He said, Keith just made my mom's life. He had brought his mom, who's not doing well. She's in a wheelchair and on oxygen. So he had rolled her to the side. Well, as Keith is going through the stadium, through the arena, he sees her, completely stops what he's doing, goes back, retracts, goes over, talks to her, and then makes his way back to the stage. You can only do that if you are so present about everything that's happening around you and you're not going off script. And no one does that, Jim.
I lose track writing a paragraph.
Totally.
I mean, do that? I mean, you see a sign and then you go back to it later, right?
Yeah, just clocking everything.
So you have that in your... Do you ever get off stage and say, oh, I forgot to do this or that?
Oh, sure.
I
mean, you do? Yeah, yeah. But I also think that everything that happened was meant to happen, and everything that didn't wasn't, and you move on to the next show.
I mean, it was perfect timing when you brought out a marching band at the end of that show. It just shocked everyone, I think. And so great that you did that TSU marching band, correct?
Yeah. See, and there's a collaboration, because Elizabeth, who's my manager, I said, well, you need a great marching band. And she said, well, TSU would be great. So she organized it, got them down to the venue. We rehearsed everything quickly that afternoon and kind of choreographed it as fast as we could with the limited run-through time we had.
Yeah, I must say, you know, I'm a fan, and I hate when shows just stop dead in the middle and somebody turns into a family slideshow all of a sudden. Like, oh, my God, get on with it. And but I'm a jaded radio guy. And your show, you're able to do all these things, these bits and pieces, and it never stops the flow. That urgency is like from wire to wire.
Mm.
And you must be constantly thinking about that. Like, okay, Nicole's been on stage long enough now, and I'm going to kick into my next song.
Sure.
Is it just timing in your head?
Yeah.
You're editing in your head.
You're just trying to feel the room. Mm-hmm. Feel the room that it's time to move on, or this is interesting. There's something more in this. It's like, well, you do it with interviews. You're in the middle of an interview. You can tell there's a question that's got an answer. The answer is
done. So far? Okay,
so it's fantastic. But you know, you do it. There's an answer that's interesting, and you let it go.
Right,
further.
I kind of throw my questions away once we start.
Yeah,
and just
or you sort of move on to the next thing. So you're doing it in real time too. I have a different job.
Do you tinker with your set list before you
every
go on stage?
Night.
Oh, wow.
Every afternoon. Every single afternoon. Yeah.
Yeah, you know, is it on a teleprompter or something? Like, are the guys in the band, can they see it?
There's a set list on stage.
One set list?
Well, no, each guy's got a set list in front of him. But it's written out in the afternoon at soundcheck.
Okay. So then
sometimes tweaked right before we go on too.
And you're tweaking it right on stage sometimes
too. Sometimes, yeah, scrap that song, go to the next one.
Cindy, how many shows did you see? Was this Nashville show one of the best shows you've seen?
Oh, my gosh, yeah. I mean, the energy from that, I think people are still talking about in this town. And this town, as you said, there's a lot of jaded in this town because everybody plays this town. Nashville gets every show that there is. So
aren't some artists like afraid to play Nashville or don't want to play Nashville?
Well, I think that until you have a big enough audience, you don't play Nashville. I would say that was one of my rules. But yeah, I mean, it's scary to play your own backyard where everybody's looking and everything. But people are still talking about that show that happened weeks ago because it was so much fun. And that is not generally true.
Yeah, and what I love about
fun,
it is,
but dude, so it was like you will never see that show again. You knew it then. You knew it in the moment.
It was Nashville, but it wasn't in the bubble Nashville.
Totally, totally.
You know, I just want to compliment you on that.
Thank you.
Because I always call people on like, oh, get out of your bubble, you know. And that show was Nashville, but it was Nashville. It wasn't like inside industry Nashville.
No.
While you still embrace that side of your show, you know, you featured artists and writers and all of that while still being accessible to the common person out there, you know, like me. So, you know, I don't know how you do that, but you must be thinking about it all the time.
I think I'm more common than anything else because I listen to music. Like, I'm an uber fan of music. I go to concerts. I love going to concerts. I love being entertained.
What was the last great concert you saw?
Last great concert?
Yeah, somebody completely off topic that you...
Well, probably the Springsteen show up in New York.
The Broadway
his
thing?
His one-man show, yeah.
Oh, thanks for taking me, by the way. Tickets are like $750 or whatever. I don't think I want to see that.
Yeah, you do.
I don't know.
Yeah, you do. But for a whole different
reason.
So
that was a great show?
It was a great show because it was a brand
new... It wasn't self-absorbed?
It was a whole new construct of connection and storytelling where, for me, the music actually took a back seat, which was... I've never seen anything like it. It was a new way of doing and being and connecting and...
Well, you kind of did that when I saw you at the Country Music Hall of Fame. You kind of deconstructed Blue Ain't Your Color and did... Mm. Was that during... Cindy, was that during Country Radio Seminar? Was that?
Yeah, would have been during CRS.
It felt like you were in a living room and you were talking about and that's why I picked up like, this guy must be a total wizard in the studio. Because it was like a living room thing. You're talking to us, there's a small crowd. Mm. And it kind of, I haven't seen the Bruce on Broadway thing, but it probably had that same kind of feel.
Yeah, I mean, a whole different.
Would you ever go out and just do an acoustic thing, just play like the Ryman type theaters?
I'm interested in finding a new way to tell a new story. Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
And the tour now, you're on tour now. So I'm so thankful that you came here today. So are you touring Canada right now? Is
yes,
this a Canadian
we're
league?
Up in there. We're up in Ottawa on Friday.
How's Lindsay L. doing?
Saturday. She's doing great.
She's your only opening act on
that?
Yeah. And that's another thing. Thank you for not having four opening acts.
You're welcome. More time for us to play.
I get tired. I think it's awesome that you had Kelsey on this leg and that now you have Lindsay L. Mm. She's a great guitarist, you think?
Yeah. Yeah, she's really good.
How come it's harder for a woman to make it as a guitarist, artist, songwriter than it is for a guy, you think? There haven't been a lot.
Oh, that's part of it. And I think it's a generational thing about breaking the mold of giving a girl a guitar instead of ballet slippers.
You know, she's on the song Horses.
Give her some drumsticks.
Which is great.
Mm. Yeah, and I think it's just being exposed to those things and knowing that that's absolutely a direction you can go in.
Hmm. Cindy, have you been up to the Canadian shows yet?
I have not, no.
Oh, okay. So how long is that like going for?
Till another week and a bit, we end up in Vancouver. We go to Winnipeg tomorrow. And then we're in Saskatoon and Edmonton, Calgary.
Saskatoon.
Vancouver, yeah.
There's a Guess Who song about Lindsay was schooled by Randy Bachman, who was in the Guess
That's
Who.
That's right. She told me
Cummings,
that.
Yeah. You know, it's American crazy. Woman and all those songs. And I think those guys are all from, maybe Randy Bachman will come out.
Oh, there you go.
Do you know him?
I met him once in Winnipeg.
He's like 80
years
now
ago.
Or something, I think. But those are great songs. Mm-hmm. Years ago. And I hear you might go to the UK. Is that on the books? Or
yes.
You're just thinking about it at this point? Cindy?
No, it's on the books.
It's on the books. Yeah. Going.
It's been a long time since you played there, right?
Yeah, it has. And Germany and Ireland, Scotland, all through there. We haven't played there in years and years.
Wow, that is really awesome. How do you decide where you're going to go? and how long the tour is going to go, or you just muddle that, keep talking about it?
It's a little bit of where the record's connecting and where we feel, you know, we can go and tour. We haven't been in a long time. Those places are perfect for that.
Do they all know the music as good as, like,
I'll as let well you as, know.
All right, check back with me. I ran the London Marathon last year, so I have an in.
Did you really?
And I ran the Berlin Marathon the year before that.
How long is that?
We can get talk about that if you want, huh?
How long is that?
26.2 miles.
Good Lord.
Yeah. I just hit Donna Gina because I raised I'm a cancer survivor, so I raised money for lymphoma research because I'm a non-Hodgkin's lymphoma survivor.
Amazing.
And we had one of your guitars signed that you guys were so gracious to give me, and we got more than any other item I've ever, and I've been doing this for a long time now, raising money. So we got $5,000 for it at a little show on Broadway, some fan in from somewhere.
Incredible.
It's the most I ever got for anything.
Good for you, Jim.
Yeah, so I'm doing Boston in April.
Wow.
If you want to go out to the Good Cup and play a few songs for me.
How do you feel about doing that now?
This is so inside now. Like,
no, this is
the
great.
The Good Cup is a coffee shop where Keith used to go to that I always write there. I always write. And they always say, Keith and Nicole used to come in here all the time. Years ago.
Yeah, well, we used to live a couple of miles from there. So right. We'd go there in the morning.
So sorry to get so inside like that. Maybe that's why I got fired from radio when I was in.
It's all making sense now.
Radio. So you're asking how that feels to run a. You run a marathon every night on stage, it seems.
Not quite that long. I have a stick on the back of my truck that says 0.0, I don't run.
You're that guy.
Yeah.
It's 26.2 miles.
It's incredible.
And I'm sure you could do it because doesn't it seem like he's doing it?
Absolutely.
I could do it if I had a guitar and was singing and there was a crowd following me for the whole run of it.
Get out of here. You're in great shape. Do you ever take a time and just chill for a while with your family and take a long I was asking Donna Jean about that before. Do you ever take a long break from everything, just get off the grid?
I think we do a good job of sort of threading being off the grid with being on the grid all throughout all of this. You know, days where we drop the kids at school and we have all day to just hang out at the house and go swimming and go see a movie and take naps and watch TV and whatever, just do nothing. We've done that for the last 2 days.
It must be so hard to get together. I mean, Nicole is always doing something, right? And you're always.
Well, not always.
Always doing
and we
something.
And
so.
We try and schedule it where it's in sync, where we can do nothing together.
At home and just getting takeout or whatever.
Yeah, totally.
You're able to fit that in.
Oh, yeah, it's life. You got to live.
I've got to ask one question about your lovely wife, if you don't mind. Is she doing, is that happening, that Big Little Lies, the next series?
Yeah, oh yeah, it's oh, almost
God, I
wrapped.
I love that show.
Yeah.
Phenomenal.
Early next year it'll come out.
Did you see it, Cindy?
Mm-hmm.
It's tremendous, right?
It's great, yeah.
And that ending, I don't want to be a spoiler, but the ending was crazy. So are you always thinking about what's next, and are you already thinking about like the next record?
I'm always creating. I think that's what it is. I'm always creating and always being inspired. I watched that great documentary on Ed Sheeran called Songwriter, and he said,
"Who you've written, right?"
Yeah, he said, "Songs, they never give you any warning." It's a fantastic line. It's true. They just come out of nowhere.
Are you always marking things? Like,
yeah,
I'm going to write about this, or
always singing into my phone. Charlie Puth does the same thing. He called his album Voice Notes because that's what he sings into on his phone is the Voice Notes app. Yeah, so I can relate to that.
But for the grace of God, you are, I must have been born a lucky guy. Heaven only knows how I've been blessed with the gift of your love. And I look around.
For both of you, how has music changed from when you first started to now? Is it just as is country music just as good now as it was in 2000? I don't feel like you have to say yes.
It's relative. I mean, it's relative to the elements that are infused into it, which in the end are no different than, you know, I always have this conversation about if you look at a timeline of country music from the late 50s when it started to go more contrapolitan.
Mm-hmm.
And it, you know, Chet Atkins, Owen Bradley, these are the guys that said, well, let's get rid of the fiddle and let's bring in a string section. Let's get rid of the pedal steel and let's bring in lush piano, Floyd Kramer type stuff. Let's make it more contrapolitan, more pop, blatantly. Let's make it more pop. And so that started then. It's the same now as it ever was. You can just, instead of now, you're like, well, instead of the lush string section, it's a synthesizer. Instead of the tinkly piano, it's a drum machine. But we're still bringing elements in to our genre to keep it evolving, moving forward, and staying relevant.
Are you using all... It seems to me like your music embodies everything from Don Williams to Ed Sheeran, and that you have snippets of all of that in your sound.
Well, songs. I mean, if you look at a song like Never Coming Down, for example... the way I look at Graffiti U is underneath the hood, it's absolutely in this long line of albums I've done, it's Golden Road, it's Be Here, it's all those records, because underneath it's songs that I love, melodies, universal themes, guitar riffs, catchy choruses, guitar solos, all the things I love are all on Graffiti U. It's just got a new coat of paint, different clothes, you know. But
that's
underneath.
A great way to sum it up.
But you know, because if you look at, so I grew up with someone like Don Williams that has that classic kind of. That's a classic Don Williams feel. Coffee black, you know, cigarette. Start this day like all the rest. So it's classic Don Williams. It was all the stuff I grew up with. Strong beat, strong groove. You could say Waylon, same thing. Only daddy that'll walk the line. It's all Texas. So then you take a song like Never Coming Down. It's really that. I can feel it coming on now as the music plays. Taking shots with the night owls as the world just fades away. Got a paycheck in my pocket. About to get it all gone. Light it up like a rocket. We're going all night long. Everybody sing. Ooh. Mm-hmm. I love it when you. Ooh. Mm-hmm. When the sun go down, stars come out. It's a, can you feel it? When I take it by hand, dancing and we pass it around, round, round. Yeah, we're so high, we could paint the sky, tear the top right off the ceiling. And I swear we're never, ever coming down. Never coming down. Tell me now, can you feel it?
I mean, that is so great.
The
thank
bones
you.
Of it is that. But if you. So for me, we could go in the studio and cut it like that. But then I'm more interested in the bass going. With the night owls, as the world just fades away, got a paycheck in my pocket. You know, it's same song, different coat of paint.
How old is that guitar, by the way?
1946.
No, yeah. Really?
Yeah.
Wow.
What's really cool about 1946 Martins is that most every guitar has a truss rod. It's a big piece of steel under the neck to keep it from bending, but because of the war. In 44 or 45, there was a steel shortage. So all these guitars had no steel in them. So the neck is really big and chunky because it had to be just a big, chunky, solid piece of wood with no steel in it.
Is that one of your favorite guitars?
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
What's the oldest guitar that you have? Do you
probably know? That one. Yeah, that one.
That one is the oldest? Yeah. What make is it?
Martin.
Martin.
Yeah.
Wow, thank you for bringing that.
Oh, yeah,
it's such a treat. How about you, Cindy? I mean, you work with it all the time and signing new artists. Is music, how has it changed from when you first started till today?
I think there's some really interesting records being made right now. I think the way they're getting exposed is changed more than, you know, it's not about good or bad. It's that, to me, we're always better as a format when we're wide. Lots of diversity, lots of different things happening. So I still think those records are being made. They're not all being played on radio, but they are being made. So I think that there's great stuff coming out right now.
Yeah, I agree. Is great music timeless?
Yeah. Yeah. Also, you know, people...
Do you think about that? Sorry to interrupt you, but do you think about that? Like, will this song be relevant 25 years from now? Will people still be playing this song?
I don't know. I don't know about...
You don't think about that, really?
I can't think about that.
Just make a great song and it will, right?
Yeah. Yeah. I feel this. I believe this. This is authentic. Authentically who I am.
Yes.
Take a photo of that, you know, and then keep creating.
And it seems like... You know, you go back and you're talking about artists like Don Williams, and then you're talking about artists like Ed Sheeran. You're able to keep that historical aspect while still, you know, not saying that the current artists are not up to par or whatever. They're just as good in their own way. I think you're able to bridge that gap. And maybe that is why Graffiti U has so many sounds in it, because your music kind of embodies all that history.
It does, and it's, you know, I grew up playing in cover bands. So, you know, I grew up playing a mix of touring around all the country music clubs in Australia with my parents.
In Australia?
Competing at all these country music festivals, you know, and playing country music. And my dad's record collection was all country music, so the house was predominantly that. But I had a two-year older brother who loved ELO, Fleetwood Mac, Eagles, Supertramp. So I grew up with all of that. My mom loved Neil Diamond, Everly Brothers, so I had all of that. So,
wow.
If you throw all that together and then put Top 40 Radio...
It's quite a mashup.
You know, then the common denominator really in all of it is groove, rhythm, melody. And because I mostly grew up with radio, then... I love radio songs. I love radio songs.
And
that's what
Top
I grew
40
up with.
Radio back then would be from
everything.
Motown to the Raspberries.
Just everything.
You know, and everything, and the Electric Light Orchestra, and Marvin Gaye, and all these different sounds.
Well, we were listening to ELO the other day, Electric Light Orchestra. And, you know, obviously they're very Beatles influence. But the difference is Jeff Lynne obviously loves catchy songs. He loves radio. So really, ELO is just a radio version of the Beatles. They're the catchy commercial singles version of the Beatles. Because all their songs Jeff wrote were incredibly catchy.
He was a huge Beatles
fan.
Great
melodies. Easy to sing along. Universal. So that was very influential for me.
I love that you think that. What was the first record you bought? Not to put you on the spot.
Wow.
Right, people used to buy records, Cindy.
Yeah, it was likely Charlie Daniels Band, The Devil Went Down to Georgia.
What area was that in?
What area?
Where'd you grow up?
I grew up in North Carolina.
Oh. And you're a citizen of North Carolina and the United States, correct?
Correct.
I was going to ask
that
Keith.
That is correct.
Dual citizenship. I'm just kidding, obviously. Are you an Australian citizen still?
American and Australian.
Yeah, I heard you were New Zealand, Australian, and... American.
Well, I mean, my parents were from New Zealand, so when I was very young, I had a New Zealand passport, but I now just have the two, Australian
just
and American.
I know we're running out of time here, but I want to end with just thanking you so much. I know that you are up for 3 Country Music Awards this time. I asked about records going to number one still, meaning a lot. What about awards? Does it still... What is the sense of an icon like you? How do you put awards into perspective, and how do you think about them, if I can ask?
It's an incredible feeling. I mean, when I was about 12, I competed in this BMX race.
Mm-hmm.
Ever since I was 7, I'd been competing in talent quests and music, different things, and I'd gotten little trophies and different little pennants and, you know, little sashes and stuff that give you if you won something, you know.
Trinkets
and whatnot. But I went in this BMX competition one time, and I came third, and I got my little third place trophy. And it's just that feeling that has never left me, of the feeling of getting a trophy for anything. It's an incredible feeling. Anybody that's won a trophy for sport or anything they've ever done, it's an incredible feeling. And for me, with music, I'm just trying to make a connection. And to a large degree, I think those awards represent the sort of extreme level of that connection.
Cindy, what's your take on, from a record label perspective?
I think that everybody wants to be rewarded by their peers, of course. Mm-hmm. I mean, I think that ultimately we're not all in it for the awards. I mean, people go to work every day and they don't get an award for doing something. It is really about the payoff of how you get to connect with other human beings. And I think that's what the awards represent. Whether it's the performance on the stage or whether it's, you know, the award that you're given that night, that's what it's about. And I feel like that's how we see it.
Mm. You're up for Entertainer of the Year. Mm. And, you know, seeing that show at the arena, I just think this is just tremendous. And, you know, it would be great if you brought that home, the trophy home this year.
You know, I just watched Jim and Andy, which is a great documentary if you haven't seen that,
about Jim Carrey and the making of
Man on the Moon. That documentary is fascinating, and there's a great moment where he's being interviewed, and early on he was playing all these comedy clubs, and he said he would go home every night just going, what do they want? What do they want? He said, I'd sit in my little apartment, and he goes, I know what I want, but what do they want? And as an entertainer, I'm sitting here going, yeah, me too. That is the number one question every night on this tour. I go off the stage and I go, what do they want? What worked? What didn't work? What do they want? And then he said, and I realized one night what they want. They want to be free of concern. He said, that's what they want. He said, so I knew right then and there that was my path in life. I was going to be the guy who gave them the ability to be free of concern. And that's really what I try and do every night when I get on stage.
The world is crazy, so to provide that escape.
Totally. And you can't be free of concern. You've got too much responsibility, but somebody can do it for you. And you can live through them for those 2 hours.
I think that is so great. Well, I want to commend you for all the success you've had. And the album is tremendous.
And
just good luck down the road.
Thank you.
Good luck at the CMA Awards. Be safe out there.
Yes, thank you.
I know you're going around the world.
Yeah.
Cindy, all the best to you, and thank you for taking time today.
I appreciate it.
Yes, thank you for your time, Jim.
All right. Well, this is Jim Asker with Keith Urban and Cindy Mabe on the Billboard Chartbeat podcast.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.